Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 133 of The Morning After. I am your host today, Sari Kamen. My co-host, Jesse Kiefer, is on a plane, so she is not with us in studio because she is going to California. And we're jealous of her, but we're happy for her. And yet we miss her. So many feelings. Luckily, I am not alone in studio. I am with my dear, dear friend, the chef and owner of Dirt Candy, Chef Amanda Cohen. Yay! Welcome to the show, Amanda Cohen.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. And Amanda has a lot to talk about because the next version of Dirt Candy 2.0
is going
to be moving on up to the Lower East Side is opening up next month. We are going to talk with her extensively about that. But first, some food news, which Amanda, if you have feelings, you should feel free. This is a non-judgment feeling. Yes, this is a non-judgmental feeling space. Same with you, Liz. All right, that's our engineer. Okay. First, many of you have probably heard there was a bit of a macadamia nut gate scandal that happened in South Korea recently. A woman traveling from New York to South Korea, she happened to be related to the president of Korean Airlines, I believe. She was a bit upset. She was served some macadamia nuts, but they were served not on a plate as she would have preferred. Instead, they were served in a bag. And she was so offended by the casualness of these nuts that she ordered the plane, I think, be turned around. And the person who served her was fired and had to get off the plane because she could not stand to be in his presence another minute. So this has turned into quite a big deal. But there is a silver lining, and the silver lining goes to macadamia nuts.
That's right.
Yeah, because now South Koreans who formerly were not very familiar with what macadamias are famous, and everyone's like, what's the deal? What are these nuts that caused such a tirade? So apparently sales have surged nearly 12-fold during the 5 days after the scandal came out, and that's without any advertising and any promotions. So pretty excited that macadamias are having...
The best thing to ever happen to the macadamia.
The best thing to ever happen.
That's nuts.
Well played, Liz.
I want to know what happened to the steward who served the nuts. Is he hired again?
I think he was sent to North Korea.
Oh, good. He's probably watching the interview.
Okay, let's move on from there. The world's cheesiest pizza was just created, not in Italy, not in the United States, but in Melbourne, Australia. The pie, which was created by one Johnny DeFrancesco, who runs the pizzeria 400 Gridi, has 99 different cheeses on it. And I'm going to say he's got 99 problems, but cheese ain't one.
I'm a little disappointed. I would have think that the pizza with the most cheese would have at least 100 cheeses.
How many
on
cheeses
it.
Are there in the world? You're a chef.
More than 99.
Okay, we heard it here, folks. So I guess he got 99 cheeses and he had 94 cheeses and he blended them together into a new kind of cheese, which he calls super cheese. And then the remaining five he just spread on the top, which were buffalo mozzarella, ricotta, goat. I don't know. That doesn't exactly equal 99, but apparently there were 99. And I want to point out that Grub Street pointed out when they reported this that in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, I don't know if you saw that. It's like,
I haven't.
I think it won the Oscar last year.
Yeah, it's on my list, though.
Okay. Maybe I think it comes out on Christmas. Donatello, who is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, he swore that a 99 cheese pizza is a, quote, culinary impossibility. So now we know that Donatella
is wrong.
Was lying. He can't believe it. So this guy, I guess, he disproved that theory.
I love super cheese. Super cheese.
Super cheese. That's, I wonder, like, if, like, you get superpowers.
I think so. Absolutely.
Just like a super, you can reaction to lactose. Okay, and also, it was a really big week in drive-thrus. There was a bunch of stories about them. I picked two. First of all, that a customer who was going through the drive-thru at a Whataburger. I don't know Whataburger. What a Whataburger is.
I don't know.
I think it's like a, it's a place that sells great
burgers.
Like, Whataburger.
Like, hey, I want a burger. Whataburger.
Whataburger it is. Yeah. So it's a drive-thru. it's in Houston. I almost said Houston. Isn't that weird? Like, the reverse effect happens when you live for that long. Okay, so this woman was going through the drive-thru, and the woman working at the drive-thru was like, hey, let me take your order, and I love your mink coat. So the woman who was wearing the coat, whose name is Nadine, when she went to pick up her food, she took off her coat and then slipped it through the French fry portal. So apparently the coat is worth $10,000.
How cold is it in Houston that she needs to be wearing a mink coat?
I mean, I thought it would be an interesting story for you to bring up, considering you run a vegetarian restaurant. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you can wear mink coats at Dirt Candy. Nobody ever has. But now I know if you say you like something, they'll give it to you.
Yes.
I'm going to try this.
That's a really good point.
Right? Like, I like your iPhone case.
And they're like, oh, well, I would love to give it to you.
Yeah, but even if they don't want to give it to you, you're just like, thanks, I'll take it.
That's completely on the table now.
Right.
As we have seen ever since Nadine was like, I love giving people things. It makes me feel really good. And the best part of the story is that that day actually happened to be that worker's birthday. So if you ask for something on your birthday, you can definitely get it. And if you don't get it immediately, you are entitled to then take it.
Yes, absolutely.
Which, in this situation, the woman did not have to jump through the drive-through window and forcibly remove a mink coat. Luckily, it was just given to her. So also in drive-through news, this is not as happy a story, but it's still pretty great. A woman in Ohio was arrested after she went through the drive-thru in McDonald's and she passed out in line. So they couldn't get her to order. She fell asleep. They called the cops. The cops woke her up and she was slurring her words. She was crying. And then she insisted that she had swine flu, which can often be mistaken for drunk.
Well, and whenever I get swine flu, I tend to pass out in fast food parking lots. It's where I like to go.
What comes first? You get swine flu by being in the parking lot of a McDonald's? Or if you get swine flu, you're like, oh, I just need a McDonald's and then I'll feel better.
Yeah, I think it's like a cure.
I think it goes both ways.
You think so?
I think it just depends.
We should both get it and see what happens.
Good idea. All right, that's the news for this morning. We'll be right back with Chef Amanda Cohen.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
It is so exciting to have this new medium.
Hosting After the Jump has been a huge part of me transitioning from being a blogger to somebody who has sort of real important conversations with people in real life.
My show, I kind of describe it as an audio trade magazine.
I learn a ton from the guests every week, whether it's restaurants, bars.
All the hosts at Heritage all come from different perspectives.
Everyone should be listening to this. If you're interested in conservation and practical approach to renewable food sources, you know, not this big industry.
Whether it's history, laws, social policies of food, I think people now take food seriously, and hopefully what's on their plate will become something very special.
And I feel that podcasting
has a future. Giving people information in a format they can really use on the go.
We need your support to keep these conversations going. To donate, visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
And you're back. You are listening to The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. You're back. I'm back, too. How about you, Amanda?
I am definitely back. I'm here. Let's do this.
Everybody's here. This is The Morning After with your host, Sari Kamen, today. Guest today, she is the chef and owner of Michelin-starred vegetarian restaurant Dirt Candy. She is the author of Dirt Candy, a cookbook, and she pens the column, Dispatches from Dirt Candy, for Eater New York. Welcome to The Morning After, Amanda Cohen.
Thank you. I do have to say I don't have a Michelin star. I have a Bib Gourmand. I'm Michelin recognized, but I don't have that elusive star yet.
You have been falsely written about then, I will say, on the internet, which has let me down.
I know, but you should always believe everything you read on the internet.
Which is why you have a Michelin star exactly. At your famous vegetarian restaurant, Dirt Candy. Okay, well, anyway, you should, so that's silly.
The next place, when you're not sitting on top of each other.
Okay, well, speaking of that, Dirt Candy closed.
Dirt Candy closed.
And it's reopening next month.
Right. We closed at the end of August. We've been closed for the last 4 months, and we will reopen sometime in January.
And from my understanding, you're reopening because you're moving into a bigger space.
Definitely much bigger space. Little Dirt Candy was 350 square feet, had 18 seats in total, and we are moving to a giant place that's 2,000 square feet and can seat 55 people. We've definitely sort of increased the potential for failure about a billion times.
And success.
Or success.
I will say either my half-empty friend. So I'm really excited about the opening. It's been a long, cold time since you've been shut down. What have you been doing?
I don't know what I've been doing, but I've been having a really good time. I'm having this sort of like existential like crisis right now about how I'm not sure I want to go back to work, even though I have to go back to work. Like, I don't have a choice.
Although you've been working.
I've been working, but I've been at home every night. So it's the first time in 10 years that I've been at home more than like two nights in a row. Like, it's like you feel like a normal person all of a sudden. You're like, quitting time, 5 o'clock.
You're like, oh, this is how the other half lives.
Yeah, it's really like, you know, you wake up at a normal time and you're not tired all the time and you see people, like friends again. So mostly I've just been doing nothing. It feels like nothing compared to when you're in a restaurant every day and like answering the phone and cooking and serving people. Now I'm like on my computer, I'm finishing emails, but it's much easier.
Yeah, I can't think of a job that would be more time consuming than a chef, and especially being a chef owner.
Right. It just eats up every single hour of your day. So
yeah,
not looking forward to it.
Okay, so.
But I'm really excited for the opening.
Are you here to tell us where the opening's off?
We're shutting down.
You're becoming a public speaker figure. This is your first stop.
Exactly.
A motivational speaker.
I know. Don't you want to open a restaurant now?
I never did. And I still don't.
No, don't.
But I do want to come eat in Dirt Candy.
You must come eat. I'm actually really excited for it. And one of the nice thing that's happened is every day, like in the last couple of weeks, I've been at the new space and I really love it. It's really beautiful. And I'm excited to go there in a way that I never was for Little Dirt Candy. Because even before we opened, I could see the problems that were going to happen. And in this space, it's just big and there's room for everybody and we have storage. And I'm like, oh, this
all
is the
things
dream.
That a real restaurant had. Yeah.
When I'm like giving people tours, we've been interviewing staff. I'm like, well, it's like a real restaurant. Look, we have storage. And they're like, well, did you not have a real restaurant before? And I was like, not really. We had like, you know, like Barbie Playmobil restaurant. Like,
you really tricked everyone, though.
I know. We made it work.
You really did. So let's kind of like get down to the nitty gritty and talk about what's different and what's the same. I mean, excluding the space, because that's just the most obvious thing. And we've covered that.
Different is actually going to be the size of my staff and my kitchen. The kitchen is much bigger, which is going to allow us to do so much more. So now we're going to be able to be open for lunch and brunch, Ooh. Which is something that we've always wanted to do.
Oh, good. More time.
More time. Woo!
Where you're on your feet.
Yeah. But now I have, like we have real staff. Like, I have a manager. And this is, like, Whoa. The most exciting thing that's ever happened to any of us. Like,
did you have a sous before?
I had okay. somebody who sort of, like, did all the ordering and would help manage the kitchen. And I had a nighttime person who was also sort of in charge. We'll have the same at the new place, but not somebody who I had to do all the invoices and the QuickBooks and the accounting at the old place and answering the phone. And now I have a manager and she does that and she's awesome, Jackie. And I'm like, Jackie, do you mind doing this? And she's like, I don't mind doing it. I want to do it. It's my job. And I'm
like,
for 6 years, I've hated your job. I'm so glad you like it. And we're going to have a pastry chef. We're going to have lots of line cooks and people can take days off. Before, old Dirt Candy is like, if you get sick, I'll kill you. So there's no point in getting sick.
Because you'll be dead.
You'll be dead. And if you die, you still have to come to work.
Oh.
Like, there's no, you cannot.
You run a tough ship there, lady.
Yeah, exactly. So at the new place, we're going to have so many more staff members that somebody can actually get sick or
what about
take
you?
A vacation.
What about if you get sick?
It's fine.
It's fine. Because before, would you kill yourself if you got sick?
I wouldn't. No, I'd just go into work. I'd just go do it, and it was
basically
awful.
Basically like death.
It was. I felt bad for everybody who had to witness that, and I'm sure I was in a really pissy mood those days. That's the biggest change, mm-hmm. just being able to, you know, have more staff members and people who can do more, and we don't all have to feel like we're under such pressure. Even all my cooks had to answer the phone all day long if I wasn't there. And although they did a great job at it, it sucks. You know, you're doing your job, and then all of a sudden you have to stop and take a reservation, or you have to do the dishes, or whatever. Like, what was annoying was happening. They had to do, and here everybody can just focus on their job.
So it sounds like life's going to get a little bit easier, actually, this time around. And maybe since you guys had to do everything before and it was so annoying, it'll just make this, like, new incarnation of the restaurant kind of feel like a breeze.
I think in some ways it will, and in some ways we have a whole new set of problems. We've always been a really small staff, and now we're going to have probably close to 30, 35 people once we're fully open, and that just seems like a headache. We're going to have to make friends. We've already had to sit down and be like, look, you guys, we have to talk to the new people when they come in. We can't just huddle in the corner.
Have you started hiring yet?
We've hired some line cooks and some prep cooks, and we're finishing up hiring a pastry chef right now.
Are you hiring servers?
Yeah, we will be.
Do you want to put a call out?
Sure. If you want to come work at the new Dirt Candy,
it's a real restaurant.
It's a real restaurant. You can email info@dirtcandynyc.com. But the important thing to know at the new Dirt Candy is there is no tipping.
Yes.
Yes.
Let's discuss that. That's huge.
I think it is. I hope it works.
You wrote this kind of like proclamation type article. Where you declared, you know, tipping was an antiquated way of conducting service.
I think
so. And you have very strong opinions about it. Lots of people have strong opinions about it one way or the other.
Yes, they
it's
do.
A very controversial issue, I think, in the last 2 years, maybe. It's been floating around as something that's really up for debate. So tell us why you feel like tipping should be eliminated in general, overall, and then how it's going to work.
So there's two reasons that we're sort of eliminating it. The first is I think you should be able to come and do your job and get paid a fair wage as a server. You shouldn't have
to. So just to be clear, no one's working for free.
No one's working for free. We've pretty much broken down the numbers, and I believe the servers will make $25 an hour.
Which is great.
Which is good, right? And then the shift should be 8 hours. So that's a good guarantee of $200. As opposed to nights when you work in a restaurant and you might only get $70. Now, you're also probably never going to have those nights where you're going to make $600. What you will have is, at Dirt Candy, we're going to have something called a bonus. And at the end of the month, whatever's left over, we'll have an admin fee on the check. So it'll be 20%. That will go to help pay the payroll. And then whatever's left over in that will be divided amongst everybody who works at Dirt Candy who's not salaried. And it'll come in as a bonus. And so what we've sort of figured out is if we do okay, if you work as a server or even as a line cook, it doesn't matter, you should end up with probably $100 to $200 more every week on top of your paycheck. If what this is allowing us to do is pay our kitchen workers a lot more. So right now, kitchen workers make anywhere between $10 to $15, $16, which is not a lot for them to live on. They work really hard and they work really long hours. At Dirt Candy, everybody should make at the end of the week at least $600 to $700. That's actually a fair living wage. Mm-hmm. But I can only pay everybody if I can sort of, if we can get this admin fee and then we can break it down ourselves in the back of house.
So how do you think that's going to affect service, or do you think it will affect service?
I don't think it'll affect service at all. We're all in this together. We all want to sell as much food and wine as possible. You're still working. You should never think, I feel like there's this idea if you're a server that you're working just to make your tips. And I actually don't think really good servers think that way. I think really good servers are like, I want to do my job. I want to do what's right for the restaurant. And I want to make money. And the way we've set it up, you can still make money. You know what you're going to make, basically. You're not hustling. You shouldn't have to hustle. You're not a stripper. There's nothing wrong, though, with being a stripper. It's a totally great job. Just not at my restaurant.
So those servers who just heard Amanda's call and are like, I don't know, I like to go to work because I like to be competitive.
Then that's not the place for you.
Yeah, I like to work my tables and, you know, get the most money and need not apply.
They need not apply, but we've had actually lots of people who are interested who are like, you know what? If I work 5 nights a week, that's great. I make $1,000 a week plus some at the end of the month, and I know that I'm going to make that. I feel really comfortable. The biggest complaint I've seen, or the biggest backlash, I guess I should say, about deciding not to take tips is, I guess people are like, well, if I don't like my service, what am I supposed to do? How am I going to tell the server that? And I think, just tell the server. Just call over the manager, the exact same thing that you would do with if you didn't like your food. And, you know, say, hey, I'm really unhappy, and let the management deal with it the same way you would deal with the food. How can you as a customer think it's fair just because you didn't like something to take away somebody's wages? Mm-hmm. Like, that sucks.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, unfortunately, it does happen that people use as an excuse, I think, sometimes to tip less. You know, if something goes wrong in the kitchen, it's often taken out on the server who may have nothing to do with it at all.
Absolutely. Service is slow. It doesn't necessarily have to do with the actual server. Of course, it has to do with something in the kitchen. Or, you know what, you can have a bad day at work. That's actually okay, too. You shouldn't be punished. We're all human. So this is a way to sort of make it much fairer and to take the control, I think, actually out of the customer's hands and put it where it should be, which is in the, like, restaurant's hands.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's a... You know, it's exciting. It makes sense. And I'm really curious to see how it's going to go. And then if it goes well, I imagine it could influence a lot of other restaurateurs.
I have a feeling that if it works for us, other people will try to do it too.
Well, it's like there will be an argument in place. You know, people can stop sort of guessing about how it's going to work.
And they may
look at you as a model.
Choose to do it the way we do it. Everybody's coming up with their own systems. We're all trying to figure this out. I have no idea if I have the best system. I have no idea if it's going to work or not. I think it will. But at least we're trying to do something. We're trying to make this a fairer place for everybody who sort of live and works in this community.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I love about you, Amanda, is like, you're a chef, but you don't take, you know, your job as seriously. Well, I don't want to say you don't take your job as seriously. You've written about this and you've written about it really eloquently. Like, at the end of the day, it's just food
it's
dinner. So there's no, I would say, like, what you don't take seriously is like the fakeness,
no,
like the pretense.
Absolutely not.
That goes along with dining. But you do take things like that seriously, like making sure that your workers get paid and that they have what they need to pay their rent, and that, you know, they're able to take sick days. And I don't know, like, what your feelings are about trying to incorporate benefits into the situation. I know that's harder. Yeah, but yeah.
We're trying.
I have no doubt you're headed in that direction.
I don't take the food. I mean, I take the food seriously. We all work really hard on it, but you're right. And it's like I've said, at the end of the day, it's just food. You're going to have another meal the next day. And I'm not sure if I'm going to change the world through my food. But I'm responsible for a lot of people. There's like, right now I have 7 people working for me. In the next couple of years, I'll have at least 30, if not more. I have a responsibility to them. And so what I have to make better is their lives, or I think I'm a really shitty boss if I don't do that.
Yeah. Well, this conversation is getting kind of serious. So why don't we back it up for a second and talk about the food at the new Dirt Candy? Because I know you've had some, you know, some breakout hits that have been with you all along. I want to know what's staying and what's going, or what is coming.
Most things are coming but in different forms. Probably our most famous dishes right now, let's say, are the hush puppies. We're not touching those. Those are as is.
Yeah.
The portobello mousse.
Yes!
It will be there, but it'll be there in a different form.
Okay.
I think we're going to make balls. Mushroom balls.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other dish that people really like and have sort of been like, don't take it off, has been the broccoli hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be there. And we have found so many uses for the broccoli florets that we were giving away beforehand. So we have like fried Korean broccoli and broccoli salads and broccoli slaw.
You're doing some nose-to-tail vegetable
yeah,
cooking
we are.
Over there.
We are using everything.
That's great.
We finally actually can. We have the space to put things away. And then we're doing a lot of really fun things. We've been able to experiment over the last 4 months, and so we have like all kinds of vegetable breads and vegetable pastas, some really fun I'm trying to think, like, we're making vegetable monkey breads.
Yeah.
That's really good. That's going to be the starter on the tables. We have some shared plates, large format. We were deciding whether or not we wanted to do, like, small plates or large plates, and I was like, let's go big.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little dirt candy was so small, we can only fit one plate on the table at a time. But here we have normal-sized tables.
It's the Texas dirt candy.
Exactly. Everything except is Texas-sized.
With all vegetables.
Giant-sized vegetable margaritas.
Are you still going to be doing kind of vegetable-infused desserts?
Yeah, it is everything. The concept is the same. It's just more. It is. It's like we've Texas-sized. I love this description of it. It's like when I was in college and I went to BBQs every day and I was like, they were like, do you want a margarita? And I'd be like, I want the Texas-sized margarita. Texas-sized dirt candy. So our menu's bigger. We're still going to have vegetable desserts, but we're going to have more vegetable desserts. Everything is still focused on one vegetable, though.
Okay. So, with little dirt candy, I don't know. Maybe it's because of the space. I mean, everything that you served was really refined. And maybe, do you think that was a result of the fact that everything kind of did have to be minimized and it made it feel really kind of dainty and
yes.
elegant? And is that, do you think you're going to lose some of the integrity of like the elevated cooking once it gets bigger?
No, I think it's actually going to be so much easier for us. We can mm-hmm. finally spread out. So we can do more than one. You know, one of the funny things at dirt candy, like at a regular restaurant, you'll sometimes like make more than one table at once. And you can sort of like, not like factory it, but you can do two or three tables and it's actually pretty easy as you sort of like decorate plates or whatever. At dirt candy, you could sort of do half a plate at a time. So I actually think we're going to be more refined and probably more prissy and fussy, but in a good way.
But in a not but very
no,
serious way.
No, not serious and no tweezers.
No tweezers.
Except for my eyebrows.
But not during service.
I hope not during service.
I mean, you're the chef.
I could do it.
So, I mean, let's talk about this kind of cuisine that you do anyway, because you've been doing it. Dirt Candy opened in 2008, and you kind of changed the game as far as like what a vegetarian restaurant could be. And somehow, you know, people started eating your food and all of a sudden it transcended being a vegetarian
right.
restaurant. It became an excellent restaurant that happened to be vegetarian as opposed to being a vegetarian restaurant that happened to have really good food. So what do you think it is about Dirt Candy that distinguishes itself amongst the like Angelica's Kitchens, etc., that are, you know, often kind of feel polarizing to people who are more omnivorous?
Right. Well, I think all those restaurants, and they can be really, really good, but they're more lifestyle restaurants. You know, I feel like they want you to sort of be vegan or be vegetarian, and they, you know, you go to be eat and be healthy. At Dirt Candy, I don't really care about your health. And I don't care what you had for lunch or what you're going to have for breakfast. I really want you to enjoy my food at the moment. And that to me has always been this really big difference. Whereas, you know, if you're like, oh, I'm really healthy, where should I go eat? There's all these vegetarian restaurants. And if you're like, oh, I just really want to eat a plate of unhealthy vegetables, where should I go eat? You can go to Dirt Candy.
But it's not necessarily unhealthy food.
It's not unhealthy, but it's not diet food.
Right.
We're not the diet restaurant.
But it's just food.
It's just food. It's what I'm a chef. I make food. That's what I do. And
yeah.
It's not more serious than that. It isn't, you know, I'm not going to cure anything with my food. Maybe
but
a bad
I can think
mood.
Of plenty of places that I like to go when I want an unhealthy plate of vegetarian food, and it's not Dirt Candy.
That's true.
It's places that have like fried tofu burgers, you know, topped with fake sour cream.
That sounds delicious.
It does. It is delicious. And I know it's like a guilty pleasure. Right. I mean, I don't eat meat either. So when I want like my true fix of unhealthy food, like I know exactly where to go. And Dirt Candy would never be on my radar.
I think sort of halfway through our existence, we really got people to understand that we're not a vegetarian restaurant. And I've said this before, and I truly mean it. If you can show me a piece of meat or fish or chicken or anything that made a vegetable taste better, I would actually put it on the menu. I haven't discovered that yet. So we only happen to be vegetarian because I think vegetables stand alone just fine.
Yeah. Well, what about tofu or used tofu?
I use tofu.
But what about other, you know, like the fake meats?
I haven't really found a use for them yet. I think in the right setting, they are delicious and done well. They can actually be really gourmet. But at Dirt Candy, again, I think they take away from the vegetable. And my whole goal is to just, you know, be like, hey, this is a carrot. This is the best tasting carrot you've ever had. Tofu works well because, you know, it really does absorb all the flavors. But like tempeh or seitan, any of that kind of stuff, I feel like it takes away from it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, 2014 was kind of an exciting year. I mean, you guys closed and now you're reopening. Woo-hoo! So 2015 is going to be that much more exciting. But looking back, because this is, you know, it's almost the end of the year. This is the last episode of The Morning After before it is 2015, which is super exciting. Were there any kind of standouts for you? I mean, you know what you're doing and you're in a really good place as far as like your restaurant opening. But was there anything else that came through that kind of made an impression on you in the last year that opened?
Restaurants?
Yeah. Or just like bites or dishes or, you know, anything that you ate.
Yeah. I had a couple of really good meals. I hadn't been back in years and I went to 11 Madison Park mm-hmm. and had just a perfect meal. It was everything it should have been.
Is there a vegetable tasting that you did? Or is it just the regular?
I think I ate fish.
Okay.
I ate fish. So, but there was plenty of vegetables. And it was just, not all meals are always about the food. It was just, the whole experience was exactly what this 4-star restaurant should have been.
That's a place that takes food seriously.
Way more seriously than I do.
But it worked.
It does work.
Yeah.
And it works for them. I also had a really great meal at Huertas.
That's my new favorite place of 2014.
Good? I know. It's so good. I'm so happy for them.
I was actually going to say that for me, if this conversation happened to turn back to me, which, how would that happen? The mushrooms there are like my favorite
dish
of 2014. And I ate them and I thought, oh my God, I just ate bacon and I don't eat bacon. And I called the waitress over. And in a very not annoying way, I was like, hey, do these have bacon? And she was like, no, it's just the smoked garlic, which is so brilliant.
Yeah. They're killing it.
And if you are someone who like wants to feel like they're eating meat and isn't, those mushrooms are crazy delicious. They have just nailed that like smoky flavor.
Without, I agree.
You know, while still really letting those mushrooms shine. So I'm glad to hear you say that because we're on the same page there. Twinsies. What about things that have just kind of happened within the food and restaurant industry? I mean, you were one of the first people to speak up after, like, the timeout with all the male chefs came. And, you know, you're just, like, a really expressive voice within the food industry, especially when it comes to being a female chef, but certainly not limited to.
No, I have opinions on so many things.
But you're really good at articulating them, too, which is why it works.
I think, actually, it's been a pretty good year. I think female chefs are really starting to get recognized for all their hard work. And that's a first. It certainly, I could not have said that in 2013. Mm-hmm. I think we have an industry that's matured. So even though it's not something that we want to embrace, we have no choice, but we are in New York now, we have to have sick days. So all our staff members are entitled to 5 days of paid sick leave. And even though it might hurt our bottom line, it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's appropriate. So I think that's awesome. I also think this isn't something I've written about, but I think we have a sort of one of the sides to the restaurant industry is all the food writing and all the food sites. And in the last sort of year, I think all these sites have really matured as well. And we're starting to see some really interesting food writing, and everybody sort of backed away from the gossip and sort of move back towards the food and sort of really interesting food stories. And I'm excited to go to like food sites now and read them as opposed to terrified that I'm going to read something about myself on them. And that's, to me, this whole industry is really sort of maturing together. And I think it's terrific.
Cool. What do you think needs to be worked on? What should we focus on for 2015?
Well, I still think workers need to be paid more, and I think as an industry we need to decide on that. I actually don't think we charge enough for food across the board, and we need to start. This is sort of starts with us, but you know, if you go back down to like the farmers and what they're paid and how much they're getting for the food they produce, it's not enough. We don't as a country spend enough money on food. Even though we spend trillions of dollars on it, it's still not enough. I'm getting a little worried about all these reservation sites. Mm-hmm. So I've had a couple of meetings with, people who are like, you know, we'll pay you $5, give us, you know, your table for the night or however it works. And there's this notion, but there are these words they keep using, which are like, we're trying to get the right people into mm-hmm. your restaurant. And I'm like, who are these right people? Like, I don't care. And they're like, no, we'll profile them for you. And I'm like, please don't profile my customers. These are bad words. So that's making me a little bit nervous that we are partially turning into a very elite industry as well.
That makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I just hate the thought that I could be excluded from getting a reservation at somewhere I want to eat.
Right.
I mean, I don't know
what... fit the profile.
Well, I mean, what does that mean? I don't have enough money, you know, or look like I have enough money, or...
I mean, I think you look like you have enough money, but yeah, I mean, that's sort of... That's been the undercurrent of these conversations, and it's not exactly what they mean, but it's so close to what they mean. And I just think, you know, I'm not talking about something like ticketed reservations. That's really different, but the reservation mm-hmm. sites, they really are trying to sort of control who's coming to restaurants. And I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, am I not pretty enough? Will I not get into a restaurant?
I mean, it just sounds like another way for a company to make money.
Right. But in a very sort of select, awful way.
A horrible way.
Horrible way.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that. I mean, that I don't know too much about that because when I think about it, it kind of makes me feel sick. So I've sort of been avoiding that it's starting to happen. But yeah, I don't like that. All right. Well, gross. I hate to take a break right here, but I think we shall. And then we'll come back with the morning after quiz.
Okay.
All right. And you're still listening to The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. I am still your host, Sari Kamen, and I still have the lovely Amanda Cohen in studio. Amanda.
Yes.
You know a lot about cooking vegetables that are as delicious as candy. But how much do you know about the most famous movie about candy ever, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
And I don't know that
this is a rhetorical question. And I'm talking about the 1971 version with Gene Wilder, not to be mistaken with the 2000 5 version-ish with Johnny Depp. Chef Cohen, this is the morning after quiz. Are you ready?
I'll never be ready, but I can't stop you.
I can't stop this train. Okay, first question. What, you have seen this movie, yes?
I have. It's true.
Okay. Then I shall proceed.
Okay. If I had said I hadn't, would you proceed anyways?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Okay. What element within Willy Wonka's factory must not ever be touched by human hands? Was it A, the chocolate river, B, the golden goose eggs, or C, the fizzy lifting drink room?
The chocolate river?
Well, you're right. Well, way to go. It is the chocolate river. And in the movie, if you recall, Augustus Gloop ignores Willy Wonka's warnings and he falls into the chocolate river while he's trying to drink from it because it's a river made of chocolate.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah. And then he gets sucked through a pipe, which leads somewhere, but we kind of never really know where. And then Willy Wonka gets an Oompa Loompa to guide his mom to meet him at the fudge room, which...
The fudge room.
Whoa. That sounds gross. Okay. Next question. After reading the script, Gene Wilder said he would make the film under one condition. Was that condition A, the entire set must be edible so that no matter what he decided to bite into, it would be delicious? B, he would be allowed to somersault in the scene when he first meets the children? Or C, he was allowed to scare the children in unpredictable ways throughout the filming?
I hope C.
He was allowed to scare the children in unpredictable ways. Although it may seem like that, it was actually not C. The answer was B. His one condition is that in the scene where he first meets the children, he would be allowed to somersault.
That seems like such a strange condition.
And
like
such a reasonable one, too.
You'd want him to do that.
Yes, you would. And he was granted that. Okay. last question for 2 out of 3.
For 2 out of 3. Yeah. What do I win?
Something.
Good.
Okay, something good. I think you have to get him all right to win. But, you know, consolation prize. Okay, which famous actor and dancer expressed an interest in playing Bill, the candy store owner, the guy who sings the Candyman song?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not the person who was eventually cast. It's someone who was well-known at the time and wanted to play that part. Was it A, Clint Eastwood, B, Sammy Davis Jr., or C, Chaim Topol, a.k.a. Tevye the Milkman?
Oh, Tevye.
Chaim Topol,
yeah.
It is a very, very good guess.
I'm wrong, aren't I?
You are wrong, but I so loved that you guessed that. The answer was actually Sammy Davis Jr.
Well, I thought maybe.
Yeah, and
the filmmakers
decide that it would have been too kitschy and declined, and they thought it would have been weird to have someone so recognizable in that scene and take people like out of the
context of the movie.
Yeah, take people out of the reality of the movie. Nevertheless, the candy store song became a staple of Davis's stage show for many years. So.
That's true, I guess.
I think I've never seen the internet.
Well, what did I tell you about believing everything on the internet?
To do
everything.
It. to always do it. Well, Amanda, I want to thank you so much for coming on The Morning After. It is always such a delight. You are always welcome here, and you are a very, very special guest.
Wow, well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. Merry early Christmas.
Yay! You're listening to The Morning After. Next time you listen, it'll be the next year. Whoa!
Woo-hoo! 2015!
See you in 2015. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.